evening and welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Our topic tonight is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD. I invite our listeners to call in with your comments or questions. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. This evening, we have as our guests Devin Faircloth, licensed professional counselor, and Chi-Chi Zhang, graduate student. Devin, I'm going to start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do?
Sure. Thank you for having me here. So I received my bachelor's degree in psychology and my master's of science in counseling psychology right here from Louisiana State University in Shreveport. After I graduated, I applied for my LPC licensure and I started working at a partial hospitalization program. What that is it's a step down from an inpatient unit. This is when patients don't meet that requirement to be inpatient. Maybe they're not a danger to themselves or anyone else, so they still need that 5 days a week treatment. We provide psychotherapy groups, education groups, and they get that medication management from a doctor. After working in the PHP department, I went to work in an intensive outpatient program. This is a step down treatment from PHP for patients that don't need medical supervision. And this helps clients smoothly transition from the hospital back into an everyday life. It's more accommodating for their work and family life. Working there, I worked with clients with a variety of diagnoses from depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and addiction. And currently, I'm doing private counseling at the Center for Therapy. I'm focusing on working with children and adolescents. We also provide occupational, physical, and speech therapy. We specialize in autism spectrum disorder. We provide social skills groups and specialized therapeutic programs that focus on developmental milestones.
And Chi-Chi, tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Sure. So my name is Chi-Chi. I am a graduate student at LSUS. I obtained my bachelor's degree at LSUS and then continued there in the Master of Science in Counseling program. And I am currently in my second year, and I'm doing my internship under Dr. Shelley Visconti at Goble Vegan and Associates. And it's been quite a whirlwind, but very rewarding.
Yeah, sorry. poor Devin has had to work under me too.
She made it though.
Yeah. So let me invite our listeners first, and then we're going to talk about ADHD and a little bit about what it is. Please join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So let's start by talking about just how common is ADHD?
It's very common. I looked up some stats from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and it's reported that 11% of children from the age of 4 to 17 is diagnosed with ADHD. That's about 6 million children in America, and that's a 43% increase from 2003.
And that's just a parent report, so the number could be also higher than that.
Right, yeah.
So why do people develop ADHD?
So it's a neurodevelopmental disorder, which means it manifests early in childhood. I actually saw stats of children as young as age 2 that their parent reported that they had symptoms of ADHD. So it's defined by impairing levels of inattention, disorganization, and or hyperactivity and impulsivity.
So if we were to see a child or an adult with ADHD, what are some of the behaviors or problems that they might display if we were just looking at someone who met criteria for this diagnosis?
Right. Well, the two main categories of symptoms we look at when diagnosing someone with ADHD is going to be the hyperactivity and the inattention.
So if someone is hyperactive, is that going to look differently than the inattention, or is that going to look pretty much the same?
No, it looks different. The hyperactive symptoms are, these are the children that have a difficult time staying seated in class. They may run and climb.
They fidget with their hands a lot.
Yeah, their parents kind of describe them as on the go. And then we have the symptoms of inattention, and that's when the children are making careless mistakes in school. They may forget things easily. They may start tasks and not be able to finish because they have a difficult time sustaining attention.
and being distracted by external stimuli a lot, daydreaming, like if you're talking to a child and they just completely lose you and you don't think they're listening, they're often thinking of anything and everything that their mind goes to.
Yeah, their parents usually say that their mind seems like it's elsewhere.
Right.
So this is a child that in the classroom we might want to sit them away from a window or sit them kind of away from other peers or things like that because those things might cause them to be distracted.
Right, yeah.
And have difficulty paying attention to the teacher. Or as an adult, maybe having a desk that isn't cluttered or, you know, things like that that might distract them.
Yeah, these are adults that if you have your own office, it may be helpful to close the door. And if you don't have your own office, you can wear noise-canceling headphones to cut out those outside distractions while you work.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So we already talked a little bit about the different types of ADHD, the hyperactive, the inattentive. Can you have both?
Yes, you can have a combined presentation, which is both the inattentive and the hyperactive and impulsive presentation.
So you can have hyperactive, you can have inattentive, or you can have both, or is it just, which is it? Go ahead.
Say that again.
Okay. So someone can have hyperactive, mm-hmm. and they can have inattentive, and they can have both.
Right. So you're going to have symptoms from both categories, not being able to stay organized or pay attention to details and tasks, and then also having those impulsive symptoms of fidgeting, not sitting still, and kind of blurting out and interrupting.
And I like to also add that boys are 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD, but when we talk about the inattentive type, girls are more likely to present with this type.
And often those girls, at least it's been my observation, that they will kind of slide through the cracks, that they don't get diagnosed quite as early. Some of those girls who are inattentive but not necessarily hyperactive, because they're not causing a ruckus.
Yeah, they withdraw from others. They may be internalizing their symptoms, so people may see these children and describe them as shy or withdrawn.
Yeah. So often these children, because they're not drawing a lot of attention to themselves, parents or teachers may not quite as easily pick up on the fact that this child does have ADHD. What might be some of the things that a teacher or a parent might pick up on to let them know that a child has ADHD?
Just being educated on what the symptoms are. I'm not sure how exactly the school system is, if they have particular training, but I think that would be very helpful for teachers at the beginning of the year to sit together and kind of have someone educate them on what to look for.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So we already talked about some of the symptoms. Any other symptoms that y'all can think about as far as ADHD?
Well, I like to say that the symptoms of ADHD, you know, when we talk about children and adults, the symptoms are going to be primarily the same, but it's important to know that they may present different because they may be different in severity. And as people with ADHD get older, they learn to compensate for the symptoms they had as a child. You know, your ADHD at 40 is not going to look like your ADHD at 5 when you couldn't sit seated in class.
Yeah, sometimes I'll have adults that come in and say I grew out of it, but when we kind of scratch the surface a little bit, it's not necessarily that they grew out of it. It's that they still have some of these difficulties. They've just adapted. They have learned techniques, just kind of through life, on how to adapt their environment, how to adapt themselves so that they can function better and kind of cope with these symptoms. And we have a caller. We have Gary from Lufkin. Gary, go right ahead with your question or comment. Okay, Gary, are you there?
Yep.
Okay,
yes,
sorry about that.
That's quite all right. Well, anyway, it may be too late, but we have a son that you know, went through this, and you know, he was on, they prescribed him Ritalin,
mm-hmm.
and we only, you know, we told him it wasn't his fault. You know, it's just like a high blood pressure, you know, it's just, you know, something you got to take medicine for.
Sure.
We didn't give him medicine during the summertime, and the deal was, if you go to school, you take your medicine. So anyway, he's he's 30 years old now. But is there, I was just going to open up with, is there any other, I mean, what's the new, I guess, drug therapy they give now?
So I know that there are quite a few new medications. A lot of those are kind of derivatives of the old medications that we've had for quite a while. There are stimulants, and then there are also non-stimulant medications that are available. Some of the newer medication are non-stimulant, or they're longer-acting stimulant medications, so that instead of having to take several doses throughout the day, that you can just take one or two doses during the day. So that's really the difference with some of the newer medications is that, like I said, we have more non-stimulant, and then also we have more choices as far as just the medications acting, being a little longer acting. Anything that y'all want to add about any medications or anything? Okay. And we have another caller. We have Bree from Shreveport. Bree, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I was wondering if you find a lot of the diagnosis of ADHD are often coupled with other diagnoses, or do you find that it's more of a standalone diagnosis?
Ladies, either one of y'all care to tackle that?
Well, yeah, I think that it definitely can have some co-occurring disorders. In children, these can present as, oppositional defiant disorder. Maybe a learning disorder is really common to be diagnosed with ADHD. And if you still continue to have ADHD into your adulthood, you may see some disorders that co-occur with it, such as anxiety or depression.
Yeah, often I'll see children who develop some test anxiety or other types of anxiety because, school can be really stressful for them. Even interacting with peers can be stressful because their energy level may be a little bit different. They may interact a little differently with their peers. And so you may see some anxiety develop, or even some depression, because the child is wondering, what's wrong with me? Why am I different? Why do I learn differently? Why do I, not pick up on things quite the way that other children pick up on. And so sometimes you will see some other difficulties that kind of stem from the ADHD.
And also, just to add on to that, some of the stimulants kind of increase the anxiety as well. So you kind of have to watch out for those symptoms and side effects.
Yeah. Some of these, all medications, have potential side effects.
Right.
But the stimulant medications can cause some anxiety or increased nervousness or jitteriness in some children. And so that is something that we have to keep an eye on with children who are taking stimulant medications. I want to invite our listeners to call and join our conversation on ADHD. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So how is ADHD diagnosed in adults?
Okay, so first and foremost, what I think is very important to keep in mind is when you think that you may be suffering from ADHD, what we're going to do is we're going to recommend that you see your primary care physician to get that medical exam, because there could be some medical issues that resemble symptoms of ADHD.
Sometimes a thyroid problem.
Thyroid, seizure disorders, they resemble a lot of ADHD symptoms. So that's what we're going to recommend first. After getting that medical exam, we're going to refer back to our Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. What a DSM is what we refer to. It has criteria that we have to go by to diagnose someone with a mental illness. So we're going to look at that, and we're going to look at these symptoms, and we're going to see if you meet these symptoms. And the criteria for ADHD is, do you meet six or more of these symptoms for 6 months or more? And we also are going to get a detailed history of your past and present functioning. The way we're going to do this is we're going to not only get this from you, but it's important that we get it from someone outside, maybe a family member, a significant other. And we also want to make sure that are these symptoms reducing your quality of life? Does it interfere with your social life, your occupation, or your interpersonal life?
Yeah, so often we will have, if it's a child, we will have parents and maybe teachers fill out questionnaires to see what kind of symptoms are being displayed at home, what kind of mm-hmm. symptoms are being displayed at work, at school. And then for an adult, we might have the adult themselves fill out a questionnaire, and then someone else, if they feel comfortable, maybe fill out a questionnaire. And then also sometimes if we're wanting to rule out other possible coexisting disorders or things like that, then we might do some additional testing. There is specific ADHD testing that we can do. Some are self-report, so just like pencil and paper. Some are actual computer tests that we can administer to help us determine, is this ADHD? What type of ADHD is this also? And we have some more callers. We have, I believe that this is Rocky from Alexandria.
Correct.
Okay, Rocky, go right ahead with your question or comment.
I'm 68 years old, and my brother pretty much diagnosed me, but he let me know indirectly. It was his specialty. But later on in life, I found out that I was forced to be left-handed. Right-handed, excuse me. And I was born left-handed. Does that have a bearing on this all this HDD? ADD rather, and dyslexia. I'm dyslexic as well.
So I know that in years past, sometimes educators and other parents and so forth would try to encourage children to write right-handed rather than left-handed. But people are going to have different dominant hands. But I know that that was a past practice of some people. Nowadays, we really try to kind of see naturally which hand the child is goes to naturally on their own, and let them use that hand. Devin, do you have anything to add to that? I know that you work with some occupational therapists and so forth.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is really common to see learning disorders that co-occur with ADHD. So when you mentioned the dyslexia, it's definitely possible that that could co-occur with the ADHD.
Yeah, so the dyslexia can be a separate disorder, or we do sometimes see dyslexia also with an ADHD. And we also have Nicholas from Natchez. Nicholas, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I'm trying to find out, are there other forms of treatment besides using the medication?
Yes, there are. Ladies, y'all want to tell him about some of the other forms of treatment?
Yes, so there are a lot of non-pharmacological treatment techniques that you can incorporate into your life to help mitigate those symptoms of ADHD. And, I don't know if you would be willing to see a counselor, but they could actually really help you kind of implement some of these strategies in your life. And some of these strategies can really help you, with interpersonal relationships and communication to work, to all areas of your life. So what difficulties are you having?
Well, I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for my nephew. He's probably, 10, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I was really trying to find out for him, because I think the medicine, some kind of way, when he's in class, it seems like the teacher says he's hyper, but like when he's on his medicine, he's like kind of like zone. Mm-hmm. Not really getting what he needs to learn while he's on the medicine. So I'm trying to see another way of dealing with it.
Yeah, and sometimes, unfortunately, sometimes we have to try different medications before we find the right medication that really works for that child. That is a complaint sometimes that I hear from parents, is that the medication can kind of make the child seem kind of dulled or just not quite as bright as they normally are. So sometimes it's just a matter of tweaking that medication, tweaking the dosage, or maybe a different medication. And then also there are specific techniques that we as counselors can work with parents, can work with teachers, can work with the child themselves to teach them, to assist them to have less difficulty paying attention. There are planners, and I know that sometimes you can use different colored pens and things like that, and just different techniques that we can recommend to really help maximize that focus, that attention, and the learning, and you know, following directions and things like that. Y'all have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to add that sometimes making simple lifestyle changes can help manage those symptoms as well. That can be things like, you know, make sure he gets involved with more physical activities, maybe get him inside of a sport, or cutting down on his screen time, making sure he gets the right amount of sleep each night. All these things can help manage those symptoms.
Right, and having a structure for him would be helpful, and whenever he's doing homework or chores or anything like that, it would be helpful to break it down into little sections so that he won't feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, so with a child with ADHD, what we don't want to do is say, hey, I want you to go grab your homework, put it in your backpack, and then when you're done doing that, I need you to grab your dirty clothes from the bedroom, and then when you do that, then make sure that you go and you brush your teeth because it's almost bedtime. We don't want to do that. We want to say, okay, go grab your homework. Then they get the homework, and then you say, okay, now go put it in your backpack, you know, because really those multi-step directions and things like that, it's just really overwhelming for children. So just making some small changes like that can really help the child to function better, and also it can help to reduce a lot of conflict and arguing and so forth that you know, the parents might run into. So we have another caller. We have Rebecca from Lafayette. Rebecca, you can go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, I'm just wondering, with children in general, I find that they can normally be inattentive and hyperactive. So how do you draw the line between what would be their normal behavior to actually having ADHD?
So one of the main things that we look for is it interfering with their functioning? So all children are going to be hyperactive at times. All children are going to get excited and be a bit of a handful. You know, all kids are going to be distracted sometimes. That's just a normal part of being a child and even an adult. But if we're seeing that it's really interfering with their home life, with their school work, if it's an adult, with their work life, you know, are they having enough difficulties for the teachers, the parents, maybe the spouse to say, hey, this is really interfering with your functioning every day. This is really interfering with your you know, your work product at home or at school. This is really interfering with our relationship because I don't feel like you're paying attention to me when we're speaking. You know, things like that. Those are what we look for. Anything that y'all want to add?
And those behaviors will present in more than just one setting. Like, it won't be just in school. It'll be at school, at home, when they're with their friends or relatives. Those symptoms will present in all those different areas.
Yeah, so we won't just see it when they're around their friends. You know, we'll see it when they're at home, when they're with friends, when they're, you know, in all these different areas, we will see these behaviors. So if a child, you know, gets really excited when they go to soccer practice or something like that, you know, that's not necessarily ADHD, but if we're seeing that same kind of hyperactivity and excitement also when they're in the classroom and also when they're at home, then that's when we start looking at, could this possibly be ADHD? And we have another caller. We have a caller from Bossier. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yes. So basically, I'm somebody who doesn't necessarily believe in ADHD. I was, you know, diagnosed as a child whenever I was around five. It was the same time that my parents got divorced. And, I mean, obviously, there's other things that influence a kid's ability to pay attention, such as their home life and what's going on. So I don't know necessarily how doctors make a distinguishing factor between things that are going on in the child's personal life and, you know, quote-unquote ADHD. Mm-hmm. I know that the prescription medication most of the time that they give to children are amphetamines, which are comparable to drugs like meth. And I, as a child, I was put on those amphetamines. I've had to be tested for Tourette as an adult and other types of disorders for tics that I've gotten that started when I was a child, that started whenever I, you know, started taking the medication that was prescribed to me. And as an adult, I've learned to self-discipline. And I got off the medication around the sixth grade because I refused to take it. And my parents would, you know, obviously have to try to sneak it into my
drink in the morning or find some way to make me take it. And eventually they quit making me take it, and I self-disciplined. My grades started to improve, and I was able to do everything on my own without the help of medication because my mindset changed. And so I have trouble believing that you know, there's a disorder out there that, you know, can cause normal children, you know, I just don't believe in it. I think that the drugs that are prescribed are hardcore simulated drugs, again, amphetamines that are comparable to meth, and I just don't believe that. I think that there are other ways and there are other things that are going on besides a disorder that you can't necessarily prove, you know, when it comes to children and ADHD. I think there are definitely real disorders out there like dyslexia and, you know, other types of, you know, mental disorders that affect people, such as special ed groups. But ADHD, I just don't believe, is one of those things. Mm-hmm. I think that each children learns differently, and each children thrives in different settings and they have different talents, and not all kids were meant to sit in a classroom for 8 hours a day and stare at a chalkboard or listen to a teacher. And you're going to have some kids, you know, out of that group of, you know, 30 or more kids in a classroom that just don't learn that way. And it's not because they have a disorder. It's because that's just not who they are, how they operate. So anyway, thank you guys. Y'all have a good one.
Yeah, no, and absolutely. I with some of what you, I don't agree with everything you say, but I do agree with a lot of what you say, because I think that, you know, sometimes I do have people come in and say, hey, well, can't you just give me medication? And no. We have to do a thorough assessment. We have to see what's going on in your life, because if there has been a divorce, if there has been some kind of major change in the child's life or the adult's life, it is normal to have some changes in behavior, some changes in attention and things like that. So we want to make sure that we rule out any environmental causes that could be temporary, because ADHD is a neurological condition. And so we should see that being present, whether there an environmental change or not. And there is that we do have neurological imaging now that does show that there are neurological differences that we can see in processing and so forth in different areas of the brain that go on in children and adults who have ADHD and ones that don't. But I agree, absolutely. We don't want to diagnose anyone with ADHD who, you know, hasn't gone through a thorough assessment to make sure that is the correct diagnosis. And I usually also recommend to my patients, let's try some of these behavioral interventions and let's see how you do. And then let's talk about medication. You know, some of the more severe cases of ADHD, I may go ahead and refer them to a physician to talk about medication. But a lot of times I want to start with those behavioral interventions and see if we can get the symptoms under control, you know, before we go to medication. Sometimes the medication is necessary, but I do want to start with some of those behavioral interventions. Sometimes I do have folks that they're like, I don't want the behavioral interventions, I just want the medication, and I strongly recommend against that. You really, really need to have those behavioral interventions also, and not just always jump to the medication, although that may be necessary in some cases. Y'all's comments, thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like medication should be that last line. You should first figure out what you can do to help the child in a non-pharmacological way. And it's kind of like having an adult having a sleep disorder. You're going to want to have good sleep hygiene and figure out what you can do to change that behavior before you get on.
Or an adult that has, or a child that has, is diabetic. You know, we want to try to control it through diet and things like that. And then we'll see if we need medication. It's
exactly.
The same. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted you, Chi-Chi.
No, that's that was my point exactly.
Sorry, it's my show. I take over sometimes. Devin, anything
you want
to add?
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, I know some parents can be cautious of medicating their children, and I completely understand that. But medication can be extremely beneficial when you have that more severe form of ADHD to help those children manage their symptoms while they're in school, while they're at social events. But we should also keep in mind that even though medication is extremely beneficial, it's not a cure-all. Mm-hmm. You know, it will help your child manage the symptoms, but you still need to implement proper coping skills inside of your child so that they learn how to, you know, manage the symptoms they still do have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the medications, you know, all medications have potential side effects. And, you know, also, but we also have to look at, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg, because often we will see tic disorders sometimes that co-occur with ADHD. So we have to, maybe if we do see a tic disorder start to develop, then we want to maybe take a medication vacation, see if the tic disorder goes away, see if it doesn't, because we do have other co-occurring disorders. And sometimes, like I said, unfortunately, we have to kind of play with the treatment and so forth to figure out what the right combination is going to be for that person. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So do you think that ADHD is underdiagnosed, overdiagnosed, or just right?
Well, in my older adult population that I see, I've noticed that they believe that it was underdiagnosed in their generation. When we talk about ADHD in group, they may say things like, well, we didn't believe in that kind of stuff back then. My parents thought it was, if I was hyper and running around and I couldn't pay attention, it was more of a behavior problem or a representation of their parenting skills. So a lot of them say that they think they went undiagnosed most of their life. And, you know, that can be dangerous because, you know, I have clients that say, I feel like because my ADHD went untreated, I went on to develop other problems like depression or anxiety. And, you know, this can lead to serious issues like self-medicating. I have clients that say, you know, I just feel so on edge all the time. I feel so hyper and, you know, I can't focus. I have these racing thoughts and I just need something, you know, to calm me down.
Yeah, I agree. When I was growing up, and I'm not that old, I'm 29, but my parents didn't talk about ADHD or anything. There was such a stigma to it. You just kind of deal with it. If you're not making the grades, you work harder. And right. It was never, you know, a thought to, well, we should probably get these symptoms checked out.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that in some cases it's overdiagnosed and in some cases it's underdiagnosed. You know, I think there are certain populations that do kind of slide through the cracks. And then sometimes children that may have a behavioral disorder or a conduct disorder and not really ADHD, that may be, you know, that may be overdiagnosed. So, you know, what's really important is that you go to a professional who is experienced in diagnosing ADHD, who is going to do a thorough assessment, who isn't going to just do a quick 5-minute questionnaire and then diagnose you. Really, we need to make sure that we're going to professionals who are doing an extensive psychosocial history and really understanding your history, really understanding your symptoms before they're just slapping a diagnosis on anybody. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. And we have another caller. We have Ashley from Bossier. Ashley, go right ahead with your question or comment. Ashley, we didn't get part of you. Start over again. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Several of my family members and I seemed to be hyper, and people would always talk about how we were hyper, but we would do really well in school. And somebody mentioned hyper-focus ADD or ADHD, and I wondered if there is such a thing and how it differs, the hyper-focus.
I do have patients who tend to hyper-focus, but there's not really a diagnosis of hyper-focused ADHD. You know, some people are just more energetic than other people, and if it doesn't interfere with your daily functioning, then enjoy that energy, you know. and if you are able to really focus on things, then again, if it's not, you know, interfering with your daily functioning, then we're not necessarily going to put a label on it. We're only going to try to treat it, you know, if it's something that is interfering with you know, daily functioning. I mean, Ashley, do you feel like that it's interfering in some way, or do you feel like it's, hey, it's fine, we like the way we are?
Well, it kind of seems like sometimes if there is something to focus on, that I'll almost just, it fills my mind all the time. And then
when there's not anything really interesting, it's kind of flitting from like one project to another. Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes from like one extreme to another. If I'm interested, it becomes kind of like, you know, I've got to learn everything about it. And if it's not interesting, then I'm ready to drop it and move on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we do now. I'm not diagnosing you, but I can say that sometimes we will see in adults and children that things that they really enjoy, like video games or something like that, that they can, you know, really focus on those things. Things that are really stimulating, they can focus on. But if it's something that isn't really stimulating for them, then their focus will wane very easily, and they will kind of jump from project to project or activity to activity. So that is one of the things that we do look for. But we would also have to see many other symptoms along with that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything that y'all want to add to Ashley's question?
I actually just did read an article that talked about a lot of people with ADHD saying that they were hyper-focusing on something after they've taken their medication. You know, they're able to focus on whatever they needed to, but then they'll get distracted and hyper-focus on something else. But again, it's not in our DSM, so it's not something that is diagnosable.
Yeah, and we also have to look at, you know, is this an obsessive-compulsive type of focus? Is this like an anxious type of focus? Or is it, you know, again, if it's not really interfering with your daily functioning, then don't worry about it. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So what about misdiagnosis? Do you think that ADHD is misdiagnosed in children, in adults, and how common do you think misdiagnosis is?
Yes, I believe that ADHD can be misdiagnosed in adults. Because a lot of disorders that we see, such as mood disorders, if you think about bipolar disorder, a lot of manic symptoms overlap with ADHD symptoms. And anxiety disorders, you know, you talked about obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, people may say that I'm having these racing thoughts. They may think it's anxiety based when in reality it's overactivity in their brain due to the ADHD.
Yeah, and in children as well, a lot of the symptoms of ADHD kind of overlap with the symptoms of anxiety disorders or like oppositional defiant disorders. So you want to have a clinician that's very skilled and can know what they're doing and how to differentiate the symptoms.
Yeah, because I'll often see in my patients who have some depression, they can't focus. In my patients who have anxiety, they can't focus. But it's not because of ADHD. It's because of depression or anxiety. And so, you know, if it's depression or anxiety, we're going to treat that differently than ADHD. So we want to make sure that we get a really accurate diagnosis so that we can make sure that we get accurate treatment. Because if it's ADHD and I'm treating depression, it's not going to be nearly as effective. If I have to make sure that the treatment is most appropriate for those particular symptoms and that particular diagnosis. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on ADHD. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. Anything else that y'all want to add about misdiagnosis?
Yeah, I was going to talk about, you know, sometimes the misdiagnosis that we see in children come from disorders like sensory processing disorder, language processing disorder, executive functioning disorder. You know, teachers may see this in class, a child's not paying attention, and they may assume that's that inattention from ADHD, when it could possibly be that the children's not paying attention because they're not able to understand what's being communicated to them, and they're not able to express what they want to say to others.
Yeah, would you talk just a little bit about sensory processing disorder and then language processing disorder? Because I'm sure that a lot of the listeners aren't really familiar with those terms as much as like depression or ADHD.
Yeah, sure.
Or something like that.
So a sensory processing disorder is a condition in which the brain has trouble receiving and responding to information that comes in through their senses. And then we have the language processing disorder, and this is when a child has a difficult time explaining what they hear and expressing what they mean to say.
So these children may seem kind of tuned out or overstimulated, but it's not because of ADHD.
Right.
It's actually because of a completely different type of disorder.
They're having difficult time. Yeah.
What about, is ADHD something that you grow out of, or is it a lifelong thing?
ADHD, it's usually diagnosed in childhood, but it does last into adulthood. It is a lifelong diagnosis. But like I said earlier, you know, does that mean that you need medication your whole life? No, that doesn't mean that, because as you grow older, you learn how to develop proper coping skills to deal with those symptoms.
Right, and your environment is going to be different. And, you know, as you grow older, you're able to educate yourself about the symptoms, what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And as children, your parents are making those decisions for you when sometimes you might not be able to communicate what's working and what's not working.
Yeah, and I have some patients that really need that medication throughout mm-hmm. the lifespan. Yeah. And then I have other patients who are able to develop some skills and some tools, and they're like, you know, I don't really need the medication. I'm good without it. So it's really an individual kind of decision that you need to make when you're choosing these different treatments and so forth. We have another caller. We have Michael from Alexandria. Michael, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi. First time caller, long listener. My son is 4 years old, and I've gotten multiple complaints from the school about his behavior disrupting other students and their learning. And I know a lot of parents just want to, like, bring their kids to the pediatrician, and there's apparently a two-step or a two, I don't know what you would call it, a two-session event that would help diagnose if he would need medicinal intervention. But is there, like, things I could be doing as a parent to be helping, you know, between the hours of 5 and 8 o'clock when I get home from work and when he goes to bed, to like help him focus in on a task a little bit better?
Y'all have any suggestions for a
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you seeing some of these symptoms at home?
Yeah, he's got ants in his pants. He can't focus on supper very good. Church is impossible. Like, you know, if you lined him up with a bunch of normal kids, you'd be able to point him out immediately.
Okay, well, you know, are you going to set an appointment up for a pediatrician? Is that what you were saying, or?
Yeah, I got that in the works. They're going to do a two session evaluation to see if medicine would help or not. But before, I'm pretty sure the doctor's going to be like, "Have you tried anything before we do this?" And that's what I'm trying to find out. Like, what things can I do as a parent? And he's got a twin sister that's pretty calm. She stays pretty focused and on task all the time. But he is quite a handful for me. And I don't know what I could be doing different to help him focus better.
Like Devin said earlier, just having that structure and routine and giving your child enough playtime, exercise to get all that out of him before maybe having him sit down for something like dinner where it requires him to be very still. And kind of, how is he sleeping? Does he have a regular sleep routine?
Yeah, he goes to bed at 8 o'clock every night.
Okay.
He stays asleep. I mean, I make him sleep in pitch black so he can't see anything. And he doesn't have any complaints about that.
Yeah, I usually recommend that if we're gonna have different the child do different tasks. So we have a minute where we run around, we get the energy out, and then we sit and eat dinner or whatever, and then we're able to get up and run around a little bit. Schoolwork, you know, homework, things like that. Breaking it up. Don't expect them to sit down and work on homework for 30 minutes or an hour. We do 5 or 10 minutes maybe, and then we get up and we do something for a few minutes. And then we go back and we do a few more minutes. So giving them those breaks and not expecting them to be super focused or super calm for extended periods of time, because it's going to be really difficult for them, and you're kind of setting them up for failure if you're expecting that out of them. So, you know, trying to break that up some sometimes is helpful, and then as Chi-Chi said, you know, really having structure, getting up at a certain time, eating at a certain time, you know, having routines, having bedtime routines, having get up routines, you know, trying to stay organized, making sure that you're giving instructions in just one little part at a time. Don't say, hey, go do this, and then go do this, and then, you know, make sure that you're giving instructions just one little section at a time. Make sure that the child is making eye contact with you when you're giving those instructions. If you need to, have the child repeat back you know, what did I just say? You said for me to go pick up my shoes. Okay, yes, go pick up your shoes so that you know that the child is paying attention. So those are some things that you can try. Devin, anything else that you can think of?
No, I agree with you and Chi Chi. I was going to say, you know, the things that you can do at home is those lifestyle changes. You know, make sure that he's, you know, not watching too much TV, playing too much video games, making sure he's getting the right amount of sleep, get him more involved in physical activities.
Yeah, just try to burn off some of that energy. And we have another caller. We have Micah from Bossier. Micah, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a couple of questions, actually. The first one was, do you think that individuals or professionals are prescribing some of these meds without giving that due process, hopefully not, to the mental assessments of the kids because parents, as you were saying, are sometimes pressuring or demanding that their kids be put on these without necessarily caring about what might be going on at home? And then, of course, I had another question about, can you actually define what you mean by disruptive or daily activities that could be disruptive in either the home life or the school life, and how that might look for younger students versus those older individuals?
So the first part of your question or comment, I would love to say that medication is never inappropriately prescribed. Sometimes it is. Unfortunately, as treatment providers, you know, we have to really be pretty firm, because we do have well-meaning parents that come in and they're at the end of their rope and they really, you know, want some answers. And so they're like, you know, medication, you know. And so, you know, you really have to be pretty firm and say, wait a second, let's make sure that we get a good evaluation and we get the proper diagnosis. And so, you know, unfortunately there are situations where the medication maybe is prescribed a little too quickly. I think that it's not a common thing, but you know, I have seen it. And then as far as disruption and your kind of daily activities and things like that. So in children, we would see that they weren't performing well in school, that they're getting, they're having behavioral problems at school. They're getting those frowny faces on their conduct, and they're not completing their homework. They're not doing well on tests. The teacher is saying, hey, you know, little Susie or little Billy is just not seeming like they're very interested. They're not really seeming to pay attention. I'm talking to them, but they don't seem to be hearing what I'm saying. And you're kind of experiencing the same things at home. You are having to repeat things numerous times. And so you'll see that it's really causing problems in the child's life or in the adult's life. All kids are going to have behavioral problems from time to time. All kids are going to have classes that they're going to enjoy and some that they don't enjoy so much. But really, it's going to be a pervasive kind of overarching problem that you see at home, you see at school, you see at work, you see in relationships, where this is really interfering with a person's ability to keep a job, to do well at work, to do well at school, to get along at home and things like that. Anything that Devin, Chi Chi, y'all would like to add to that?
Just in the school system, in a classroom, the example that I just thought of was just say the teacher tells the kids to read a chapter. Well, everyone's reading on their own, and then you have a child who has ADHD and they're not reading. They're drawing on their paper, and then they're, you know, going to their classmate on the left and the classmate on the right and kind of disrupting them, and then they can't sit still. And so then they're running around, and then they're probably talking and making jokes. So that would be very disruptive to the classroom setting. But at the same time, the teacher, how many kids is it nowadays to one teacher?
It varies,
right? Yeah. So that would be difficult for one adult to control that entire classroom. So one thing I think that would be really helpful is if you do have a child that has ADHD, maybe the teacher can sit them up at the front of the classroom closest to them so they can keep an eye on them.
Mm-hmm. So how can, I'm going to talk about something first. Let's talk about some non-pharmacological techniques. When y'all are working with patients, what do y'all do? What do y'all suggest that parents do, that teachers do to help these kids, or that adults that have ADHD, what kind of things do y'all suggest to them?
I think something that we can suggest is just teaching the teaching these people techniques for organizational skills. You know, maybe if you have a hard time focusing at school or at work, it may be best to learn how to, you know, to take notes, to write down lists to help you remember things. I also think it would be helpful for children to get into a social skills group, you know, because children that are having these symptoms of ADHD, whether it's the inattentiveness, the hyperactivity, or the impulsiveness, you know, these children can start to feel different than all the other kids in the class. So getting them inside of a group of children that understand what they're going through, and, you know, they can communicate to each other, I think this can be really helpful.
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of times people don't think about social skills, that if kids aren't paying attention in school, they're also not paying attention to social cues, and so they're not picking up and developing social skills appropriately. And so we need to make sure that we focus on not only the schoolwork, but we also focus on those social skills and make sure that these kids are picking up those social skills. And so I often will recommend social skills groups.
Yeah, I think a lot when we hear ADHD, I think the general consensus is that it's an academic problem, when it's really not. It can affect their academic life, but it can also affect their social life. Maybe they don't feel, you know, like their other classmates that don't have trouble in class paying attention. It can affect, you know, every aspect of their life.
And also just teaching parents how to talk to their child with ADHD. Like you mentioned earlier, Shelley, telling them exactly what you need them to do. I know a common thing is in the mornings, parents will tell their children, go get ready. Well, that can mean a million things to a child. So telling them, go put your clothes on, go make your bed, go put your shoes on, go brush your teeth, will be more understandable for a child instead of just go get ready.
Yeah, and sometimes having a kind of a series of pictures, you know, this is our morning routine. Here's a picture of the child putting on their clothes, and then here's a picture of the child brushing their teeth, and then here's a picture of the child getting their backpack, and you know, or a list. If the child can read, then, you know, you do a list of things. And so that kind of helps give that child a prompt as to what's next, what comes next. If the parent can't be there constantly, okay, now go do this, now go do that, you know, then sometimes having those kind of prompts can be helpful to keep the child on track, as far as, you know, hectic times like morning routine or evening routine or things like that. We might have a caller. Let me check. I'm trying to see if this line is locked or if we have a caller. No, I don't think we do. So how can adults with ADHD help to manage their symptoms at work? Any suggestions for adults?
Devin, you said earlier just keeping your door closed so you don't see those distractions. Maybe, you know, pull the curtains or the blinds, and keeping your workspace decluttered. If you don't need something on your desk, get rid of it, because what you see in front of you could be a huge mess, which will distract you even more. And then having a planner or, you know, a calendar. Everyone has a phone these days with an app that can keep track of everything.
Right. And if you experience more of the hyperactive symptoms, take breaks at work. You know, maybe sit at your desk and work for 30 minutes on your computer, and then go for a 5-minute walk around the office. Take breaks.
We've already talked about this a little bit. Anything else that we haven't covered as far as suggestions for parents?
We can talk about, you know, when Chi-Chi brought up it being the clear and concise with your children. I think that's important, too, when we think about disciplining our children. I think it's, you know, when we discipline our child, it's an opportunity to teach our child what we expect from them. Because if your child has ADHD, that's a neurological disorder, we can't punish that out of them. So when you discipline your child, you know, it may be helpful to say, this is a behavior that is acceptable from you, this behavior is unacceptable from you, and these are the consequences of these behaviors.
What about any resources for parents, for teachers, any resources that y'all can recommend?
Well, you know, you can get, when you have a child in school, they can create an individualized education plan. This is an evaluation team that consists of teachers, therapists, psychologists, or anyone else involved in your child's care to better accommodate your child's needs while they're at school.
And how would a parent go about asking for an IEP or an individualized education plan? Is that usually something that they would go to the teacher, go to the counselor? Can any of those people kind of, I mean, my understanding usually is you can go to the school counselor and ask that, or sometimes the teacher can give you some guidance as far as how to get that going.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Or sometimes schools have school psychologists. Sometimes they have like a floating school psychologist. Mm-hmm. And so that would be another resource is, you know, see if the school has a floating school psychologist that would be willing to talk with the parent. Any other resources that y'all can think of?
I mean, there are a lot of therapy clinics specializing in children with behavioral management issues. And I know a couple people, I mean, you work.
Yeah. The Center for Therapy. We work with a lot of children with ADHD. We provide social skills groups. You know, we work with children, very young children from the age of 4 or 5 to we work with adolescents or, you know, people in college. You know, we have social skills groups for people with, you know, autism and ADHD that are in college.
And there are also lots of apps, lots of great apps out there that can help. There are lots of great books. And if in doubt, you can always go and see a psychologist, a counselor. You know, we're trained in this kind of stuff. And so, you know, we can always also, you know, listen to what specific symptoms, what specific challenges are being presented and make suggestions and come up with a treatment plan that you can implement at home, at school, so that, you know, we're really tackling this problem and you're not just kind of left out there wondering how to deal with it. Any final suggestions or comments? We've just got a few more seconds.
I guess I have one last suggestion, and this is just, we've kind of already summed it up, but for a parent, just be patient with your child. You can't correct the behaviors overnight, so a lot of it is going to be on you and how you react and respond to your child.
Devin, any parting comments?
I was just going to agree with Chi-Chi. You know, when your child has a neurological disorder, it's, you know, we have to make our expectations meet them where they're at. So it's just going to require some patience and understanding.
Well, thank you, ladies, both for being on the program and sharing all of your knowledge and information. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Durth, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.